Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines. From blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to the Behind the Arc podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for taking the time to check out Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1, thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Animal app, brought to you by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. Thank you so much for listening to Behind the Arc. Tennessee gets a 70-58 win over Vanderbilt. It was not pretty by any means. Tennessee went through a lengthy offensive drought in the first half that lasted about 6 minutes. And fortunately for Tennessee, Vanderbilt not really able to take advantage, though the Commodores did temporarily take the lead there late in the first half. Tennessee went on a bit of a spurt to close out the opening frame to take a 10-point lead into the halftime break. But coming out of the gates in the second half, I wasn't really convinced if Vanderbilt was going to score again with how bad their offense looked. Vanderbilt started to put some stuff together, went on another brief drought, and then really started to put it together late and ended up pulling to within four of Tennessee at the under 4 minute timeout. And after the big dunk by Vanderbilt made it by Maxwell Evans, dunking over Eve Pons with less than 5 minutes to go, made it a 4-point game. And you kind of started to wonder, man, is Tennessee really just going to have to slump to the finish line here? And Keon Johnson, Jane Springer, those guys stepped up and put Tennessee in a position where it didn't have to worry about it over the last 4 minutes. But another bad overall offensive performance from Tennessee. Shooting 45% from the field is okay, but 31% from three, not so much. Tennessee generating a ton of offense from the line again, 18 of 22 from the free throw line. And the 17 turnovers, I think, is what makes those 70 points feel a little bit watered down, just when you consider Tennessee looked really out of sync at times, bad passes, players mishandling balls at the top of the key, just sloppy play overall at times for the Volunteers. And Vanderbilt playing without three key players, including its two leading scorers with Dylan Dessou and Scottie Pippen Jr., who account for 47% of the team's scoring. And I only say that because that graphic was thrown out there multiple times throughout the course of the night while the game was being played in Nashville. And for Tennessee to struggle to put Vanderbilt away until the final 3 minutes of the game the way that it did, Tennessee blew a 17-point lead. Vanderbilt was able to cut it down to four, had an opportunity to make it even less than that. And fortunately for Tennessee, the Vols got some help from Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer to put the game away. And overall for Johnson, it was not a good performance. He was just 1 of 6 from the line, or 1 of 6 from the field, 4 of 6 from the line, finished with only 6 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, but 6 turnovers and 4 personal fouls. Just not a great night for him. And the one field goal that he made was actually a dunk that happened, to his credit, off a nice putback, off a nice back cut that he made along the baseline. Jaden Springer with 20 points on 5 of 8 shooting, 10 of 10 from the free throw line. Victor Bailey Jr., 7 of 14 from the field, 5 of 8 from 3-point range. He finished with a game high 21 points. Vanderbilt had 4 players finish in double figures. Eve Pons had a double-double with 10 points and 10 boards to go along with a nice block there in the first half, just swatting a ball away. John Fulkerson, another night where he's not really involved with the offense. 2 of 2 from the field, 4 points, just 2 rebounds. Another quiet night for him. He was in a bit of foul trouble early, finished with 3 fouls. Tennessee elected to play small ball most of the way moving forward. And Tennessee looked to Josiah Jordan James, who was good to see him back in the lineup, but just 1 of 6 in the field, 5 rebounds, 3 steals, an assist. And so for Tennessee, it's another game where, okay, you cover the spread, but going into this game, Tennessee was expecting to face a Vanderbilt team with Dylan Dessou and Scottie Pippen Jr., two players that were really important for Vanderbilt, and expecting to face that same Vanderbilt team that had been really competitive throughout the month of February. Now, Tennessee gets the 12-point win, but it comes in really sloppy fashion. And I think when you look at Tennessee, the drought that they went on in the first half, both teams actually went on a lengthy drought. We went almost 4 minutes without a single point being scored And Vanderbilt kind of able to hang around a little bit longer than you would have liked. Vanderbilt got open looks from three. Tennessee not doing a great job with perimeter defense. And ultimately, Vanderbilt just couldn't get shots to fall. Tennessee missed open looks. At times, the shot selection was poor. And just a night that I think Tennessee is going to try to look back on and say, all right, we got the win. Ultimately, did what we had to do. Now we really have to clean some things up for Auburn. And we feels like we've been saying that and repeating the same message over and over again, talking about consistency with the offense. And that's just not the result that I think you were hoping for. And I said on Sports 180 earlier on Wednesday afternoon when I was on with Josh Ward that, you know, Tennessee could, if Tennessee wins the game by 10 points or so, would is, you know, scoring, you know, winning 65 to 58 or something like that, and is generating a third of its offense from the free throw line. I don't know if that's something you can really look forward to. Well, Tennessee scored 70 points, won 70 to 58 in what was a pretty much an ugly game, shooting 45% from the field, but generating, you know, about a fourth of its offense from the free throw line. That's not really the type of game that I think Tennessee was hoping for, given the circumstances surrounding its offense over the last several weeks and for the majority of the season. Tennessee 76 in offensive efficiency, according to the KenPom rankings. And that is easily the lowest offensive ranking of any team in the top 35 in the KenPom rankings. You have to go down to 37, where Clemson is ranked, to find a team that has a lower ranked offense. Clemson 103rd in the country in offensive efficiency. Tennessee 76. And in the top 30, the next lowest ranked team is Rutgers at 61. And I think it's just a matter of looking at some of these defensive teams in college basketball and seeing, hey, these teams, they struggle, especially when they can't get the offense going. And there's an example of that we'll get to later on in the podcast. But we know Virginia, with Tony Bennett as being a solid defensive team, well, they just lost their third straight game to North Carolina State on Wednesday night as well. So Virginia losing to Florida State last week, got beat by Duke over the weekend, and then falls again to NC State. And that's just another, you know, another example of teams that can play good defense, but losing games when the offense really sputters out if you don't have the offense to complement it. And obviously you look at the top teams in the country, Gonzaga, Baylor, they both have top 10 defenses in terms of efficiency, but they also have top 5 offenses to go with it, and they can play fast when they need to. So Tennessee, a team that has been learning how to play a little bit faster on offense, trying to get there, still can't figure it out, and is having to rely on that defense way too much. And the drought that Tennessee went through in the first half, you just can't get away with that in an NCAA tournament game, not when you're going to struggle as much as you did and try to rely on getting shots from the free throw line, because there are going to be teams that play better defense that are going to go straight up. They're not going to foul. They're going to make you work for it and try to force you to take bad shots. And if Tennessee is having offensive duds in the postseason, it's not going to last very long in the SEC or the NCAA tournament. So Tennessee gets a 70-58 win. The Vols do come out on top. They improved to 9-6 in SEC play, 16-6 on the year. Vanderbilt falls to 6-13, and Tennessee will close out its regular season pending a reschedule of the Florida game that was postponed earlier this year. It will close out its season on Saturday against Auburn. And Auburn, a team that has had a bit of a disappointing season, but it has some talent and it has some players that can put up points in a hurry. We've seen Auburn get into some high-scoring games, and Tennessee looking for a big offensive showing itself when it plays against its former head coach, Bruce Pearl, on Saturday. What happened around the rest of the SEC? What happened around the rest of college basketball? We'll discuss that next. I'm Joel Silverberg. You're listening to the Behind the Arc podcast. Earlier in the evening on Wednesday, Mississippi State knocked off South Carolina 69-48. South Carolina obviously been dealing with some personnel issues, not having everybody available. We saw how they struggled against Tennessee last week. On Tuesday, Georgia upset LSU 91-78. We've seen Georgia be able to play fast and get points going on offense. Cameron Thomas with 21 points for LSU. Tamani Kamara with 22 points for the Bulldogs on 9 of 12 shooting. And Georgia overall, 46% from the field, just 29% from three. They took 31 three-pointers in this game, but shooting 18 of 28 from the free throw line, were really solid on the glass, out-rebounded LSU, and the Tigers shooting just 26% from three-point range, 40% from the field, and Georgia just outpaced LSU, forced LSU into 11 turnovers. Georgia overall taking decent care of the basketball, but solid ball movement from the Bulldogs, 19 assists, just 11 turnovers, and LSU just unable to keep up with Georgia. And so that's a tough loss for LSU, trying to keep pace up towards the top of the SEC standings. So LSU falls to 9-5 in SEC play, kind of potentially creating some room there for Tennessee or Florida to maybe sneak in, and all those teams are going to be competing for a top four spot, depending on the way that everything shakes out this weekend and potentially next week. Elsewhere in the SEC, as we look back to Tuesday, you had Florida beating Auburn 74-57. The Kentucky-Texas A&M game was canceled. And then another upset, Ole Miss beats Missouri 60-53. So Konzo Martin's offense struggling a little bit, shooting just 35% from the field, 7 of 23 from three-point range. And the month of February continues to be unkind to Missouri, which has now lost four of its last five since upsetting Alabama on February 6th. Missouri's been swept by Ole Miss. The first one, by the way, back on February 10th was by 21 points. Arkansas beat them in overtime. Georgia beat them last week. And then they beat South Carolina over the weekend. But that's four losses in their last five games since pulling off their biggest win of the year with an upset win over Alabama. So Missouri kind of falling down the standings here as we get closer and closer to the end of the season. Missouri now 7-7 in SEC play after having a 7-0 non-conference run. And then the last SEC game on Wednesday, 20th ranked Arkansas upsets number 6 Alabama 81-66 at Bud Walton Arena. And it seeing it on TV, you could tell, okay, they're practicing social distancing. It's definitely a limited crowd, but it sounded very loud through the television at Bud Walton Arena. Could you have imagined what that crowd reaction would have been like had there not been a pandemic and we were having a full crowd down there in Fayetteville, Arkansas? And it was just a big game for Moses Moody, who had 24 points. Alabama struggling to hit three-pointers, just 33% from behind the arc, 37% from the field. And I think we've seen this in some of Alabama's tougher games, the loss that they had to Missouri, the loss that they had to Arkansas on Wednesday night, that Nate Oates approach of, okay, we either want to get to the basket or we want to take three-pointers. They try to eliminate the mid-range jumper from their game. And at times, and here's the thing, for the most part, it works. We're talking about a team that's 13-2 in conference play. So, and a team that was ranked in the top 10 in the net, the AP poll, the KenPom rankings. So again, this is a system that mostly works. But when a defense can crack it and figure it out, Alabama really struggles to get things going. Passes inside were being deflected and taken away by a really active Razorbacks defense. John Petty Jr. had 12 points. Jordan Bruner had 14 points for Alabama. Javon Quinterly came off the bench to have 13, but overall a really inefficient night. Herb Jones, who's usually a reliable inside scorer for Alabama, just 4 points. Josh Primo, Jaden Shackelford combined for 12 and 2 of 6 from outside. Just not a great night for Alabama offensively, and their tempo and that defense unable to keep up with Arkansas, which continued to just have a fantastic night. 8 straight SEC wins for the Razorbacks. They have not lost an SEC game since they last lost to Alabama last month. Around the rest of college basketball over the last couple of days, Tuesday, a lot of upsets. Michigan State stuns number 5 Illinois. Georgia Tech upsets number 16 Virginia Tech. Kansas State beats number 7 Oklahoma. And then, of course, we mentioned the Ole Miss and Missouri game. Texas beats Kansas in overtime. And then Baylor has to rally from a 17-point deficit to avoid losing to Iowa State, which was winless in Big 12 play. West Virginia took care of TCU, Villanova took care of St. John's, but you see the upsets that happened on Tuesday, just some wild results from earlier in the week. And then on Wednesday, earlier on Sports 180 on Wednesday afternoon, we ranked the top 5 college basketball teams outside of Gonzaga, Baylor, and Michigan. I had Ohio State as my number 1, but I had Virginia as the fifth best team outside of those top three because I felt like the championship pedigree was there. I didn't want to hold back-to-back losses against them. Well, now Virginia has lost three straight after losing to NC State 68-61. Florida State pummeled Miami 88-71. Miami is shorthanded. They're down to six scholarship players. They don't have a true point guard really able to run their offense because of the roster attrition they've dealt with. And then Creighton rallied from a slow start to beat DePaul 77-53. So some upsets over the last couple of days in college basketball. Virginia going down, Alabama going down, Tennessee not playing well and having to kind of shake off a bad Vanderbilt team, Illinois losing, Baylor almost losing, Virginia Tech losing, Oklahoma losing, Missouri losing. So a lot of upsets this week in terms of ranked teams falling to unranked teams in college basketball, and it appears that the madness is already getting underway before we even get to March. So looking around college basketball and kind of seeing how all that is shaped out, who are the best teams outside of those top three? My reasoning, I had Ohio State at number one because I don't want to hold the loss to Michigan against them. And then the defense concerns me a little bit, but the way that they're able to control tempo, I feel like makes up for it a little bit. And I preface this by saying I would take Gonzaga, Baylor, and Michigan. I would take one of those three teams to win the national championship versus the field because there's not another team that I believe is consistently complete enough to be able to take on those three teams. There's a potential that you have to face two of them in succession if you were to win the national championship. And so even just looking at the KenPom rankings, number four is Iowa. Well, Iowa, I don't like their defense, and that offense is great. But if there's a team that can match them blow for blow and play better defense, which Gonzaga's already shown that it can, well, then I don't really like Iowa's chances all that much. Houston, solid team, but the strength of schedule is fairly weak. And playing in the American Conference, they don't have a ton of quad one wins. They've had some bad losses, like when they lost to Tulane earlier in the season. Do faster teams speed them up and take them out of rhythm? And so I just don't see Houston as a complete enough team. Illinois, I like what they are, but I feel like they're too inconsistent. Ohio State, ultimately, I think that's the best shot, but again, that's a team that doesn't have a great defense, though I do think they have the firepower where they can compete with anybody. Alabama, to me, was the number three team that I had in that list that I mentioned. They ranked number eight in the KenPom rankings, though that's probably going to drop after Wednesday night's loss to Arkansas. But I thought for Alabama, a team that's really good offensively and defensively, is one of the fastest teams in the country. They can, if they're lighting you up from three, you don't have a chance because they're going to go so fast, they're going to continue to hit shots. But they also have a good enough defense that if they're not playing well, they can get back into games and slow things down if they need to. That didn't happen against Arkansas, but I still think Alabama's the team that could most likely beat a Gonzaga or a Baylor in a one-game scenario. I just don't know if they could win six consecutive games to win the national championship. Villanova, I don't think they have enough defensively. Florida State, they've been inconsistent. USC, I don't really know how I feel about what they could do moving forward. And again, a really good basketball team, but and a big game against Colorado coming up later this week. Wisconsin, I used to think they were really reliable. That hasn't been the case lately, especially with what we've seen them getting swept by Michigan this season and blowing that halftime lead they had against the Wolverines last week. Virginia's lost three straight, two inconsistent. Creighton, if they continue to play like the team we've seen for most of the last 2 weeks, they've got to avoid these slow starts and they have to get better defensively. But that's a team that you could look at and say, okay, maybe there's something working here, especially if you get the Marcus Egorowski that you saw at times from last year, and if Mitch Ballack continues to shoot well. West Virginia, don't like what they have defensively. Purdue, too inconsistent. BYU, not enough firepower. San Diego State, I'm not buying it. Colorado, scrappy, but not enough to really keep up with some of the faster teams in the country. And then after you get outside the top 20, you're talking about Tennessee. Well, you don't trust their offense. Texas, you don't trust their ability to stay in games late all the time. Kansas, too inconsistent. Arkansas, too inconsistent. Texas Tech oddly blows games that it shouldn't, and the offense has a tendency to sputter out. Rutgers, too inconsistent. Florida, just shorthanded and lacking firepower overall. LSU, defensively, they're such a liability. Maryland, no. Oklahoma, you would think that Oklahoma would be a better team than 30th in the KenPom rankings, but the offense is so up and down that you can't trust them. And then once you get outside the top 30, you're talking about teams like Duke, Georgia Tech, UConn, North Carolina, which lost badly on Wednesday night. So now you're just getting into teams where you're finding household names, but teams that aren't playing at a high level this season. And so, yeah, if you're giving me Gonzaga, Baylor, Michigan versus the field, give me those three teams. I will take one of those three teams to win it, even in a season that has been as chaotic as this one. Coming up on Thursday, speaking of Gonzaga and Michigan, both of them are in action at 7 o'clock. Gonzaga faces Santa Clara. Michigan with a monster game against Iowa. Illinois gets Nebraska. The Illini trying to bounce back. Houston, you'll have a chance to see them in action against a pretty good Western Kentucky team. That game tips off at 7. Ohio State is at the Breslin Center to take on Michigan State at 9 o'clock. I mentioned that USC-Colorado game. That's coming up at 9 on Thursday. Boise State-San Diego State is another mid-major game. Boise State at one point was on the bubble. They're 18-4. San Diego State is a top 25 team. A big game out in the Mountain West. Friday, the only ranked matchup is Loyola of Chicago hosting Southern Illinois. And then on Saturday, we get a ton of ranked basketball. Obviously, the SEC matchups that are going to be in full swing, but you have Michigan at Indiana, Texas and Texas Tech, Illinois, Wisconsin, which I think that's the game I'm most excited about outside the SEC. You have Bedlam with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. West Virginia's hosting Kansas State. Florida State's at North Carolina. The Tar Heels need to bounce back. Florida State needs to continue to pile up wins. Virginia Tech hosting Wake Forest. San Diego State and Boise State again. Xavier and Creighton. Southern Illinois again at Loyola Chicago, finishing up that two-game series. Baylor and Kansas. USC and Utah. Gonzaga hosts Loyola Marymount. And then in the SEC on Saturday, what I think I'm excited about the most is the LSU-Arkansas matchup. When you consider what Arkansas just did to Alabama, LSU's trying to come bounce back from a loss to Georgia. Georgia takes on South Carolina. Tennessee gets Auburn at noon. Ole Miss is at Vanderbilt. Florida's at Kentucky. Alabama's at Mississippi State. The Texas A&M-Missouri game has been postponed. So you've got six SEC games in action on Saturday. And again, that Tennessee-Auburn game, Tennessee trying to avoid another bad loss after losing to Kentucky last weekend, and you'd love to see Tennessee turn it up offensively a little bit heading into either a rematch against Florida from a previously postponed game or the SEC tournament, which as of right now is set to be played, and there's opportunity there for Tennessee if it can get some help. The Vols trying to fight for a top four seed, but it needs some things to fall their way. Right now, the SEC standings, Alabama at 13-2, Arkansas at 10-4, LSU 9-5, Florida 8-5, Tennessee 9-6. So a Tennessee win with a Florida loss would help the Vols greatly. Ole Miss at 8-7, Missouri and Kentucky at 7-7, Mississippi State at 7-8, Georgia at 7-9, Auburn at 5-10, Texas A&M at 2-6, South Carolina 3-10, Vanderbilt now 2-11 after the loss to Tennessee on Wednesday night. We'll have all the action for you on our radio station 99.1, The Sports Animal, with pregame coverage starting at 11:30, tip off at noon. On the Vol Network, Bob Kessling, Burt Bertelkamp will be on the call, and we'll have another episode of the Behind the Arc podcast for you to recap Tennessee and Auburn and the rest of the college basketball weekend. Enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you so much for listening to the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and review, hit that subscribe button, and tell a college basketball fan you know about the Behind the Arc podcast. Thank you again for listening. Tennessee and Auburn coming up at noon on Saturday, and we'll talk to you again after it all happens right here on the Behind the Arc podcast.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on The Sports Animal.